Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories that I'll be looking into on today's programme. Pope Benedict XVI speaks of his feelings of esteem and friendship for the Turkish people ahead of his pastoral visit to Turkey that begins on Tuesday. We'll have a special preview from our correspondent in Istanbul, and a Dominican priest based in the city talks about the expectations surrounding the Pope's visit, both from Christians and Muslims. Pope Benedict spoke of his feelings of esteem and sincere friendship for the Turkish people ahead of his four-day visit to Turkey that begins on Tuesday. Speaking at his Sunday Angelus address, the Pope paid tribute to Turkey's rich history and culture and urged the faithful to pray for him during his pilgrimage there. Emma McCarthy reports.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, come sapete, nei prossimi giorni mi recherò in visita in Turchia.
Just 2 days before his trip to Turkey, Pope Benedict XVI sent a message of warm greeting to the Turkish people, a people he described as rich in culture and history.
Desidero inviare un saluto cordiale al caro popolo turco, ricco di storia e di cultura.
Pope Benedict expressed his feelings of esteem and sincere friendship for the country and its leaders, as well as his joy at greeting the nation's small Catholic community. On Sunday, the Vatican also confirmed that during his stay in Istanbul, the Holy Father will visit the city's historic Blue Mosque. Pope Benedict is due to arrive in the capital Ankara on Tuesday, November 28th. There he will meet with the Turkish president and dignitaries. His four-day visit also includes a mass at an ancient Marian shrine in Ephesus. But highlighting the main reason for his historic voyage on Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI looked forward above all to his meeting with Orthodox Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I in Istanbul.
Di unirmi fraternamente alla Chiesa Ortodossa in occasione della festa dell'Apostolo Sant'Andrea.
The Pope's November the 28th to December the 1st visit is timed to coincide with the feast of Saint Andrew, one of the 12 apostles who is said to have preached in what is now Istanbul after Christ's death. In a symbolic event, the Pope and Patriarch will mark the saint's feast day with a celebration of the Divine Liturgy in the Patriarchal Cathedral of Saint George.
Paolo VI e Giovanni Paolo II.
On Sunday, Pope Benedict told pilgrims that he was following in the footsteps of his predecessors, Pope John XXIII, Pope Paul VI, and Pope John Paul II. Invoking their protection, the Holy Father invited the faithful to accompany him with prayer so that this pilgrimage can bring the fruits that God desires. The Holy Father also remembered World AIDS Day as he marked the solemnity of Christ the King in his Angelus address. Christ is King and the cross his throne. By sacrificing his life on Calvary to save mankind from sin, Christ defeated the dominion of earthly princes, establishing the kingdom of God. This was Pope Benedict's message to the thousands of pilgrims and visitors who filled a sunny St. Peter's Square this Sunday to pray the Angelus with the Holy Father.
On the solemnity of Christ the King, let us pray for the spread of the gospel, the triumph of God's reconciling love, and the coming of his eternal kingdom of holiness, justice, and peace. May Christ's peace always reign in your hearts.
That's it.
The director of the Holy See's press office, Father Federico Lombardi, said the Pope's visit to Turkey was not only aimed at closer ties between Catholic, Orthodox and Protestant Christians, but also at increasing the mutual trust, harmony and understanding between Christianity and Islam. Father Lombardi, who is also director of Vatican Radio, was speaking during an interview with a Turkish news agency on Sunday. In Istanbul, tens of thousands of people took part in a protest on Sunday against the Pope's visit. The rally was organized by the Islamic Felicity Party, a small group that is not represented in the Turkish parliament. However, the turnout was far less than expected, with the organizers having earlier predicted that up to 1 million people would take to the streets. Philippa Hitchin is in Istanbul awaiting the Pope's arrival there. And she told us more about the significance of this papal visit.
Istanbul is a unique city located literally at the crossroads between Europe and Asia. In the geographical sense, to begin with, it boasts several huge bridges spanning the Bosphorus and linking the two continents. In a political sense as well, Turkey as a whole and the ancient city of Constantinople in particular is a meeting point between East and West, a secular state looking towards Greece and the rest of Europe to the west, yet sharing borders with Syria, Iraq, and Iran to the east. Founded as Byzantium by the Greeks in the 6th century BC, it became the rich and powerful capital of the Roman Empire. After the Great Schism of 1054, it remained as the principal city of the Eastern Christian world until it was captured in 1453 by the Turkish army led by Mohammed II, who transformed it into the new center of the Ottoman Empire. The effects of this historical mix of cultures and traditions are evident as soon as you leave Istanbul's international airport and head out along the wide boulevards towards the city center, where trendy boutiques and brightly lit cafes stand out alongside small family-owned stores and restaurants, where warm, spicy smells and Middle Eastern music tempt customers inside. The people themselves testify to a strong Western influence, with many dressed in the latest designer jeans, yet others, older women in particular, wearing a more traditional style of dress and headscarf, reflecting their Islamic traditions and beliefs. When the modern Turkish state was founded in 1923, the first president, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, introduced quite drastic measures to outlaw all signs of religious practice and introduced a rigorously secular constitution. More recently, however, some signs of public worship have been creeping back in. The Muezzin, for example, can be heard from the minarets of the principal mosques, calling the faithful to prayer throughout the day, and the bells of the Catholic churches can ring out again on a Sunday or special feast day. Today, the Christian communities form a very tiny minority of the mainly Muslim population, but despite long-standing juridical problems, they have always been respected and allowed full freedom of worship. Since Archbishop Angelo Roncalli, the future Pope John XXIII, was apostolic delegate in Istanbul from 1935 to 1944, Catholics here have enjoyed a special relationship with Rome, reinforced by the visits of first Pope Paul VI in 1967 and then Pope John Paul II in 1979. Now Pope Benedict XVI comes here to confirm and strengthen the few thousand Catholics, priests, religious and lay people in their mission. But he also comes to Istanbul for an important meeting with the leader of the Orthodox world, Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I, underlining a common quest for renewed Christian unity between East and West. After meeting government officials in the capital Ankara on Tuesday and visiting the ancient pilgrimage site at Ephesus on Wednesday, the Pope arrives in Istanbul to celebrate the Feast of St. Andrew on Thursday, November the 30th, together with the Orthodox community here. He's due to meet with the different Orthodox and Catholic leaders, as well as with Turkey's top Jewish rabbi, and pay a visit, an initially unscheduled visit, to the so-called Blue Mosque as a sign of respect to the local Muslim population. Despite the difficulties leading up to this pastoral journey and a few posters dotted around the city urging the Pope to stay away, local religious and civil authorities seem confident the trip will be an important step in restoring trust between Muslims and Christians and will underline the crucial role that Turkey can play in bridging the two cultures and traditions. Turkish Foreign Minister Abdullah Gül told journalists he hopes the visit will help eliminate misunderstandings between Muslims and Christians, adding that the Pope's message will be very important. While there were no visible signs of the Pope's imminent arrival on Sunday, a significant police presence can now be seen on the major roads throughout the city centre, with snipers positioned on the rooftops and barriers being set up along the route the Pope and his entourage will take. With thousands of journalists descending on the city and the eyes of the world on Istanbul for the next few days, the Turkish government is clearly taking all precautions to make this visit as successful as possible. Awaiting Pope Benedict's arrival in Istanbul, I'm Philippa Hitchin.
But what's the situation like for the Christian minorities in Turkey? And what will be the expectations of Turkish Muslims? Well, to find out the answers to these questions and many more, Philippa spoke to Father Claudio Monge, an Italian Dominican priest who works in Istanbul, where he has set up an interfaith centre and library.
Of course, the daily life is not easy. I think that we have already internal problems, I mean, because it's a typical situation of a minority with a tendency to close in on itself, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to be prophetical when you are just few, when all generations are very important. Especially for Latin Catholic community, young generation doesn't exist, more or less.
So you're saying there's no historical memory, really, of the church there in Turkey?
This is a problem, is a typical problem, probably for Oriental churches, that they have more and more difficulties to study, to rediscover their own memory, but in a living way. I mean, not just an archaeology of a past, but to work and to build something for future, this is a problem. And in fact, I think that usually the most important expert in the traditions and liturgies on the rites concerning the Oriental churches are not belonging of these churches, but are foreigners or Western country coming from Western countries. This is a big problem, I think. And it's a very difficult also to face this actual situation in a country where 99% of people are officially Muslim, and where something is going on slowly, slowly now in the process to approach the European Union. But of course, many things more are to do to improve our situation. Also because, more or less, we don't have juridical statue in Turkey, then we are foreigners, we have not official rights, we cannot build churches, we cannot have own property as Christians. And then this is a big problem. It's a big problem in one side. In the other side, I think that can be also an opportunity, because we are much more free, poor. We can rediscover maybe the root of our presence in a very important hurt for Christian tradition, because actual Turkey means most part of the New Testament. It's not only St. Paul, but many other the churches of Apocalypse, St. John. And I think that is a way to rediscover a new place for Christianity in this world, a place to be hidden seed in the heart that can be fruitful if it's able to be faithful to a daily mission, I think, in a very simple way.
Given the kind of problems you're talking about, the lack of any legal recognition and so on, what is the Christian community there in Turkey expecting from Pope Benedict's visit?
Very difficult to say. We are very well concerned that this visit is, first of all, a political visit. I mean, the expectation are really political expectation. We are, I think, very realist. We don't expect many things. But, of course, many people will speak about this trip, and will be a new occasion to let know to everybody, especially in Western countries, our situation. And also, I think, to give a new image of this country, that is a country that is doing an effort to open itself more and more to the diversity, and also to rediscover a bit the story, his own story, because of course when we speak of Turkey, we don't speak just of the Ottoman Empire, but we speak of a country that is very rich, and it is a historical Carrefour of peoples and traditions.
Crossroads.
And people. And I think that the actual Turkish state and want really to rediscover this place, to play a role very important, close to Europe and not only, as a bridge among Europe and Western countries and Eastern country for Europe and even for Middle East, I think, and can play this role, I think. I'm optimistic for that.
As you say, there's going to be a lot of interest in this visit, particularly, of course, in the wake of all the difficulties over Pope Benedict's so-called Regensburg lecture. What do you think the Muslim communities, perhaps, in Turkey will be looking for on this trip?
I think that the Turkish reaction of this lecture were, for 1 week, very, very strong, as everywhere in the Muslim world, but also a bit different, like always, because Turkey is a country that knows a debate. It's able to think in different ways also about this. I think that now our concern that is very important probably to continue and to welcome this visit, even because the government never changed his mind of his invitation. He said no. We know, and we are very, really concerned that we need to know much more each other, and we need to give a chance to other to explain himself. And I think that we can see actually also many positive things that start after this lecture. I mean, a good reaction of a part of a moderate Islam world that try to explain himself and to come back to the precise point of this lecture, not just to react and just saying a Western country don't understand what we are, but they try to explain themselves because they understand that the Muslim world needs himself to show a better face and image in the Western country, and this is something positive.
What kind of influence does this moderate voice of Islam that you're talking about have? How influential would that be in the Turkish situation?
I think that the Turkish situation has already a long tradition of importance of moderate position in Islam because of its history. Turkish Islam is in a very strong way influenced by Sufi and mystical traditions that are historically a moderate position in Islam. And the Turkish Islam, I think, since a long time, discover that Islam world is not a monolith, but it's a very different. This is one of the most important discovering, and often with our partners in dialogue, Muslim dialogue, we discover that they are very interesting, thanks to us, to discover also their own diversity. And this is very important because when you discover a diversity in your own tradition, you are also able to go back to your fundamental roots and not just the historical things that settle in the centuries and late. And this is a good chance. I think that Turkish Islam can play a very important role in the Muslim world also, as a, how to say, laboratory of a new Islam, able to deal with diversity and also in a new way with the secularization. That is a big problem, both for Christians and for Muslims, we know very well. But that ask also concrete answer, not just fighting or opposing each other. I think that we need a dialogue even in that situation, and we need to together to come back to our spiritual roots.
also, of course, be a focus on Catholic relations with the Orthodox world, the Pope meeting with the Patriarch. What are your hopes, your expectations? I think there is quite a lot of expectation about this visit, isn't there?
Yes, even in this field, I think that, first of all, we discover, for example, as Latin Catholics, that Orthodox word himself is a very different word. I mean, of course, we know that the Pope will come in Turkey, invited by Patrick Bartholomeus, that represent not the whole Orthodox world, but a part of this world. We know that even in the Orthodox world there are different expectations about this. Also, maybe a part of this world fear a bit about this visit because it consider that is once more a visit that can give a stress, a special position of the Greek Orthodox Patriarchy in the whole Orthodox world. We know also that in the history of the Turkey, this visit will be not the first one. Already Paul VI and John Paul II came and they met every time the Orthodox Patriarchs. But Benedict is very, I think the Pope Benedict is very attentive at this difference in the Orthodox world. Because of this, he will meet also the Armenian Orthodox Patriarch. And he try really to have a meeting with all religious authorities. I think there's really concern about the necessity to help also probably a communion before in the Orthodox world himself, after in the Christian world. Because it's very difficult to find the partners in dialogue when the situation is so complex and divided.
You mentioned also, of course, Turkey's desire to become part of the European Union. From a political perspective, what do you think perhaps the local authorities are hoping for from this visit?
It's very difficult to give an answer on this question because, of course, the Turkish expectation about the visit of the Pope concerning the European Union approach are not very good because the Turks have a very good memory and they remember very well the famous speech of the Cardinal Josef Ratzinger that was not so positive about this integration of Turkey in the European Union. I think that since that time, probably even Josef Ratzinger changed a bit his mind, probably. Of course, I don't think that the Pope himself will say many things about this because really concerned that there is a big risk to transform in a political sense a visit that is first of all a spiritual apostle visit and a spiritual pilgrimage to a very important heart. I think that we need to keep in mind this thing.
Can I ask you, Claudio, at a very personal level, you've been working there and trying to understand the church there in Turkey for many years. What do you, at a very personal level, hope from this visit? In what way do you hope it might perhaps regenerate the spirit of the Christian churches there in Turkey?
I think that my hope is more linked to the work we are doing, actually, even to prepare this visit, and the work that will continue in future. I mean, my hopes are linked to the daily life. Of course, this very important visit is a big opportunity to try to do something together. We need to know each other much more. We need to work together daily, in a daily life. This is a big problem because we know very well this is a very important visit, about 2-3 weeks, media's, newspaper, television, radio will speak about this, but life will continue after. And of course, actually, we have a very good connection in this moment with people that usually we never met before. And now something new is growing. And my hope is really that we are able to be in trust, in a mutual trust. Also to discover that everybody, we are in Turkey to witness in a very simple way something of a Jesus Christ and not just to keep some new member for our churches. It is not our goal. And I think that we need to be in trust much more. And For this, I'm quite optimistic.
That was Father Claudio Munge in Istanbul talking to Philippa Hitchin. Open your eyes, it's a brand new day. Ecumenism is very much at the forefront of the Pope's visit to Turkey, and it was also one of the topics high on the agenda at the recent meeting in the city of Leeds of the Catholic bishops of England and Wales. For the first time ever, the Catholic bishops were joined for 2 days at their biannual meeting by their counterparts from the Church of England to pray together and discuss how to develop their shared Christian witness. At the end of their 4-day meeting, the Catholic bishops issued a statement calling on the British government to set the example by decommissioning nuclear weapons. The prelate said the very existence of nuclear weapons has always posed grave moral questions, and noted that Pope Benedict has argued that the retention of such weapons does not enhance the security of their possessors or the peace of the world. Britain's Trident nuclear missile system is nearing the end of its life, and the government has promised a decision on its future by the end of this year. Well, to find out more details about the topics discussed at this meeting in Leeds, I spoke afterwards to the Secretary General of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, Monsignor Andrew Summerskill. I began by asking him what prompted the bishops to issue their appeal on the Trident nuclear issue.
The bishops have been reflecting on this for quite some time. They have been seeking to understand the geopolitical situation within which the United Kingdom finds itself, and also seeking to apply to that the magisterium of the Church, and particularly what the Holy Father had to say in his World Day of Peace message, where he was pressing for progressive and concerted nuclear disarmament. And the view taken by the bishops is that the United Kingdom is now at a crossroads, and that with the questions of the replacement or the refurbishment of the Trident missile system, the time frame for within which those decisions have to be made, that the government can in fact take a step towards the goal, which I think is shared between the bishops and the government, towards progressive nuclear disarmament. The position that the bishops are taking is that the United Kingdom is in a position to take a lead, and that it should think very seriously about doing that.
I know that the meeting of the Catholic bishops this semester was notable for the fact that you also met with the Anglican bishops. Can you report back to us on the outcome of this unusual encounter?
It was certainly a historic meeting, in that I think it is the first time in which the Conference of Bishops, the Catholic bishops in England and Wales, and then the House of Bishops of the Church of England have met formally. And the meeting was characterised, I think, by prayer, frank discussion, and a real sense of sharing in coming together as leaders of communities of faith.
That was Monsignor Andrew Summerskill. And that's all from us here at the English programme for today. But we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. You can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.